So, hello, good evening. Yeah, now it's a little louder. And let me tell you, this is Table Set Yourself. I wanted to make another Table Set Yourself, number 17. This is Simon, as always, speaking, and I'm coming to you from here, from my normal place. It's normal surroundings, and everything is normal, except it's not. I want to talk to you again, Fiona, because I thought, Fiona, or I don't care. I gave you different names back then and last year, but then I stopped somehow in September. And but thinking back of this now, I thought, wow, maybe this was a mistake. Why did I just stop making these English podcasts directed at you? Because stopping then would be like an admission of guilt, like, yeah, saying, yeah, I'm guilty, I did this or that, whatever. Whatever it is that you're charging me, right, Fiona? I know. You have something against me. As we say in German, du hast etwas gegen mich. And I'm sorry, but sometimes it's just like this. Was sich liebt, das neckt sich. The ones who love each other, they are causing trouble to each other. Necken. Necken. And I gotta say, it's beautiful to talk in English again. Yeah, connected with some people when traveling, and I felt it's so sad that I don't do English podcasts anymore. So now we're back to English, and but back to English for me somehow means back to you, Fiona. Because you, of course, are Ukrainian and probably still don't understand quite perfect the German language. So therefore, gotta come back to this. And here's the translation for necken, to tease or to rally, to rip. Necken. Well, and I want to tell you just something about this WG, this communal house I'm living in here, that there's a new roommate from Morocco. He arrived in November, I think, just 3 months in. 3 months. And then there's a girl from Ukraine. She's 19, she's very young, and she gets overexploited. Oh man, just have to mention this because it makes me so angry, and I gotta do something. I will write maybe to the agency, to the Landratsamt, because this is really criminal. They're making her work 12 or 13 hours a day, and she says, like, well, she's not even allowed to call in sick one day because then she gets into trouble with her boss. And that's the way it works in Germany. She's very clever and intelligent young girl, and she already understood this about Germany. Well, yeah, there's laws, but there's also, law. On one hand, yeah, there's laws, like you shouldn't be working over 10 hours a day, and the standard working time is 8 hours. But there's also informal ways of doing it, and this is, yeah, the exploitation of the bourgeois class is pretty much limitless, and the violence that they can do to us workers is without any limits. But I feel great. At least I can, yeah, talk back some crap here. I can be strong. Like, I couldn't be in this fucking meeting with my bosses back then in August because of all this. Well, Fiona, what Fiona did. But yeah, just feeling bad about this, that I didn't fight back and just should have, yeah. Auf den Tisch hauen, you knock onto the table. This is when you get angry. This is a nice German expression. You knock onto the table, and I should have just told this to my boss. You fucking idiot. You make me pass this test, and just after this test, you want to pressure me, manipulate me, and just were waiting for this opportunity. So I'm doing this great sacrifice, sacrificing myself. Studying for months for this test, going through all of this gigantic, momentous pressure to take this fucking Microsoft Azure. I'm so angry because this is really boring stuff. And I studied hard for it, I almost passed it. I would have gotten the chance to repeat it, so therefore, I knew I don't have to study that hard to pass it on the first time, but still really hard, like 60% or so, which was my score. And just after this test, they come to me, these bosses, and tell me, yeah, we gotta let you go, and you have the choice. You sign this contract, and you will go, you will leave the company on a friendly basis, or we just have to fire you. That's the other option, and then you don't get no money at all. So yeah, I couldn't be that rebellious in that moment. I knew I should have declined this, but then I just signed. Why? I don't know. Because I'm so coward, and I hate myself for this in a way, because I wanted to fight back, and I'm always talking big deal here on the podcast, but then when it comes to, yeah, reality, then it's just I'm getting weak. Just like before in the office with you, Fiona, right? Wasn't it this way that I talked a lot in the podcast about love, but I never made an actual step? At least not, yeah, last year, just before, the year before. And yeah, now Fiona, thinking of you, because anyways, you know, I'm not together with this other girl now, this who also causes a lot of trouble and mental turbulence to me, this girl, Manita, or however you might call her. I regret now, I deleted this episode about her, the last TSY episode, number 16. I deleted it, and yeah, sorry, but this was great. This was aggressive, and because she demanded it, yeah, she demanded me to delete it, and okay, I do this. If someone tells me this, you're going too far, of course I'm going to do this. But you, Fiona, of course, you were too coward for this, to tell me anything. And then, yeah, you just went to complain. But whatever. Doesn't matter. Don't want to tell the whole story. Just want to talk here for you. And okay, please don't listen. Yeah, if you don't like to, then just let it go. Just let me talk here. Yeah, leave me alone. But it will be a pleasure to imagine that you could be listening. And yeah, exactly, because I could still be loving you. Why not? I thought, yeah, these last days, I got so sad when starting my new job there. And just thinking, or somehow, not even thinking about you, but just seeing you somehow on the streets, the figures, the person, somehow it strikes me that sometimes, yeah, I feel like, wow, this person is rather tall, this could be Fiona, but why am I thinking of her? Then I ask myself, yeah, why even Simon? But yeah, whatever. Manita, she always complained about this, that I talk about other girls and love others. And therefore, yeah, I gambled it away somehow, a relationship. That's her side of the story. And fine, I accept it, Manita, but I'm just also pissed at you, because this whole thing occurred with Fiona out of our relationship. Yeah, we weren't in a relationship. I wasn't cheating in any way. I mean, if I had done a podcast like this, of course, while we were in the relationship, this could have been seen as cheating. I mean, mental cheating, betrayal. But this wasn't even the case. I mean, we had broken up, and sorry, Manita, if you can't handle this, but just, yeah, don't even want to talk about you. Because whatever I say, I mean, I even proposed to you, I could do so many episodes about you, like for Fiona. But whatever I do, it's never going to be enough to make you feel this, that I love you as much as I loved Fiona. And okay, then just let me go back to this now. Because it's not that easy, right, to forget someone. I mean, there were nice girls in Morocco, this one girl especially, she's a brilliant writer. But still, I feel, wow, it's not that easy to just fall in love to someone else. This can't be done this easily. So therefore, yeah, want to think, want to reflect on the past. And exactly, just feel that it's not criminal. I'm not a criminal. This is not stalking or anything. And yeah, it's over the top. Maybe it's eccentric. Truly, it is. Probably, but if you're gonna tell me this is somehow nasty or criminal, then you gotta prove it. And I mean, yeah, Fiona, if you just texted me directly to stop, I could stop my podcast. But why would I stop if I have to assume you're not even listening? So yeah, there's nothing that could disturb you. So this would be crazy. Why did I even do this? So it's just a bad phase and then autumn, everything at once. Somehow I had to take care of my grandparents. My parents were on vacation and then this whole thing happened. And yeah, I think this just caught me on the wrong foot, but I don't blame you, Fiona. It's all right. I understand you. Or at least, yeah, the way I understand myself. I don't understand myself. I just understand that I'm oppressed. I'm part of the working class like you. And we are oppressed. And I'm sorry for what I said back then in the 170s, some, or 180s, that, yeah, you maybe were not worthy, either of you, right? Also Manita, she felt very hurt for this, and therefore I know. Also you would be hurt, probably, that I wanted to love someone from my own class, and yeah, I'm from a rather rich family, right? My parents, they are, my father, he's a high-class aristocrat worker. He's in charge of exploiting the other workers and therefore gets paid well. And so, yeah, this is also, yeah, whatever I expressed back then, that, yeah, in love you need to come from the same base, maybe, the same starting point, and therefore could, yeah, of course, this is totally true. This is messed up in love, that when you come from different economic backgrounds, this interferes the whole time. And I don't even know what is your real background, Fiona. You said your parents were somehow farmers, so they're not that rich, at least not that part of an aristocratic family like mine. But okay. Yeah, let me tell you what happened in Morocco. There was this girl, this other girl, not the writer, but I matched with this writer girl on Bumble. But then, oh man, this other girl, this was nasty. So, okay, let me tell you the whole story. I was feeling not that great because of everything you did to me, right, Vino? Or I did to myself, right? I knew this podcast, yeah, was over the top, and I knew this feeling of guilt was kicking in, and therefore I didn't resist this crude remarks from my bosses, and they somehow blame me and wanting me to leave the company. But this wasn't the right thing. As a communist, a worker should be fighting back. So then I languished there here in Germany writing, and there was always this thought in the back of my head I could go traveling, but yeah, but somehow I was too languish for that, and therefore I stayed here a long time until December. And just after Christmas I decided I booked my trip to Morocco and spent there like 3 weeks in January. And yeah, I gotta tell you, these 5 months now with our work, this is not that great, although I have my other work like writing, but this is not enough. I mean, yeah, it could be enough if I was that disciplined, but you never are, and this is totally normal, you know. You need to work, and this is the socialist principle, that in capitalism, work is like a privilege. You have to fight for it, you have competitors on the working market, the labor market, and this is so crude and criminal, really. This is the worst crime that capitalism is doing to all of us, to the citizens, to the working class. It turns us into competitors and makes us fight for this thing. It should be the most normal human thing. And you feel like you're totally flourishing once you're working again, like I felt. You're flourishing, and that everything goes great. And also another German girl told me this, a roommate who moved in here just a couple of weeks ago, that she is now starting to work and she feels like work, yeah, this is great. When she's working, then she's fine, and she's also had some psychological problems, she told me, but now working is great again. And the same thing is what I felt, that it's great to be working, although feeling nervous those first days, but then finally you have something to do again, and finally you can grab everything, the spirit also for writing. And even if some days in the evening I'm too tired after work, can't even write or do anything anymore, but still another day will come and then you can write. And being at work, being part of the working class, being really going part of this block, of this mass of people going to work every day, this does something to you. To me, is so great that I get up now even so early, 6:30 in the morning, then I go to the bakery here and get some coffee, and then I catch the train. I have to go a rather long distance to this new company. But this is great. Then I feel like immersed into the working class, into all these people who are traveling there with their tired faces in the train. And of course earlier, yeah, it was somehow more relaxed going to work, just in 5 minutes train ride. But now it's also great. I feel more immersed into this working class, all these people struggling to get home in the evening, get to the office or to the fabric in the morning. Wow, this is amazing stuff. I feel then you're at least part of this working class. And although this means to be oppressed nowadays, the real vile oppression is that of the unemployed, right? The people who don't even have this employment. This is the real vile structure, and real gruesome and just vile. And yeah, Fiona, I even thought about could mention your real name, but whatever. Let me. Why am I even talking to you, right? This makes it more exciting, right? I could just record an episode in English. Or could just speak to this other girl, to this English-speaking girl from Morocco. But let me catch up. I forgot to... But this point about work is the most crucial in anything. And yeah, this English-speaking girl, let's call her... she's from Morocco. Okay, whatever we might call her, not even, can't even come up with a name, I'm so sorry, but you are truly such a brilliant person, an interesting person, and I know you can understand this thought also, right, that you say you don't get along with that few vacation that you have, and I know you're very open-minded, and although the political situation is very different in Morocco, of course the country is a kingdom, it's still very different from here in Germany, but still you understand this oppression at the workplace. On one hand, yes, all this capitalism exploiting us, the workers, but on the other hand, work is also joy and gives you something to do. And you said this in our last conversation, that you that then you have something to do and you prefer this to be working than to be at home and somehow not knowing what to do. And this is so great what you're telling. Exactly, this is my thought, that we all are just this small people and we can't know for ourselves really, we can't be that sure what to do in every day, like choosing someone. It's easy, it's the right thing to go to work when you have something to do and you know already you're part of the system, of a bigger system, of a complex human net of interactions, and all the other workers are there or you're interacting with them, also the train drivers, you know, the who's in charge of getting you there, getting you to your workplace. This all has to, it's like one wheel has to touch the other wheel, and so the whole system can be working. And this is what you feel when working, and that you have your occupation. It's but still, of course, it would be great to have more vacation. As you said, you like to travel a lot in Morocco to see your family, also to other countries, and you're totally right. Of course, we have to fight for this, for workers' rights, but workers' rights. And this is just a difficult paradoxical situation, that as a communist on one hand, yeah, you have to agitate against this capitalist working system, but on the other hand also have to clear and sharpen the vision of people that it's actually something good, especially for young people, to help them also to share your experiences. I mean that it's hard when you first start a job and feeling like now you're part of the system and you can never get out. It's so bureaucratized. It's everything is so organized. They pay you on one hand, yeah, that's great, but then you have to obey, you have to always go there and can't step out of the line, can't take more vacation. This is, yeah, brutal. But I think I've explained this dialectics now. On one hand, on the other hand, truly we have to fight for socialism, because then finally we can work, just work in patience and be working in Ruhe, in all calmness. This is what another co-worker, an older one, a male colleague, told me when I was beginning 4 years ago in this old company, this fucking U-Pick company, this pig, swinish company. He told me that he just wanna do his work in all calmness and, yeah, just do his work there, and he doesn't want to be gegängelt by someone, by his supervisor, and therefore he doesn't want to go to a larger company to be treated like a child or to be hustled, gegängelt. And this is what happens in larger companies, he said, like Siemens or Mercedes, these kinds of companies. And this stuck to me somehow. Yeah, he's right. Just be working with all calmness. And this wasn't possible with this idiot Umbrak, this boss, right? But let's get back to my storyline. So one thing I wanted to mention is about this Ukrainian girl who moved in here, and she's getting to all kinds of fights with this Moroccan guy. They're both very young, 19 or 20, and this is a perfect example for what I was explaining with this German saying, was sich liebt, das neckt sich. The ones who love each other, they are causing trouble. Ah, what was necken again now? Causing trouble to each other, teasing each other, right? And this is, yeah, maybe also between you and me, Fiona, I don't know, but you know, still, it's not that bad. I mean, I lost my job, but the worst things in life, like this hell, the soldiers are going through now at the front in Ukraine, the Russian and Ukrainian soldiers, of course, are in Gaza now. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty sad and everything, about everything, not just about you, also about losing my workplace and the other company employees there who are quite nice. But okay, I mean, yeah, it's okay. I can handle it and I can just say, well, maybe it was time for a change. These other guys, they're also just, this other German guy, he didn't even reply to me, didn't want to meet again. And this other Ukrainian girl, well, I thought maybe you, Zoriana, would also maybe just give me a hand, yeah, just notice that I was going through a hard time and struggling, and maybe just, yeah, text me on Instagram or anywhere, you know my address, right? But I didn't hear from you, Zoriana, and okay, that's all right, yeah, fine. But then I just say goodbye, bye-bye. I would have liked to speak to you just to know what's going on at the company, because there are big changes happening, as my boss told me. It's been taken over by another firm, and I would be curious to know about everything, but how you all doing? But okay, then I just say, fuck you, yeah? You all, you Ukrainian, Zoriana, and this other German guy, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with you. It's like I'm fired. I'm like, it's like I have a sickness now, yeah? People are going out of my way. They want to have anything to do with me. Leprous. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I mean, I didn't have real friends or intimate colleague. At least this one German guy, and at least you, Zoriana, I thought, yeah, you sometimes might be listening to the podcast. I was talking to you, and I'm so sorry, Zoriana, but okay. Okay. Now, coming back to you, Fiona, but not to someone else, to this other Ukrainian girl living here and her relationship to the Moroccan guy. Oof, this is so complicated, causing troubles. And she's just getting so excited about everything he does. She's yelling and screaming. And but it's a two-side part. I don't even know I should be saying this here. Oh my god, this guy lives next door, but I don't know if he understands even English. But, you know, they've been struggling, complaining about this, the laundry, yeah, the laundry. There were some claims that he had taken the clothes horse, so the thing where you put your laundry to dry, he had taken this, and she said, oh my god, I'm going to denounce this to the owner of the house, and he's going to throw you out. And there was this incident, and there was an incident, well, yeah, he's using pans and utilities from the kitchen and not returning them. Of course, yeah, that's a real problem. I mean, it was all dirty here, and she sat and she cleaned up everything. But then there was a huge fight last week, not this week. Yeah, the kitchen was dirty again, and he had left some plates there in the sink and just didn't clean up. And she said then to me, oh, I'm 100% sure it was him because I saw him. And then I talked to him, the Moroccan guy, and he said to me, oh yeah, well, I left it there, but you know, I just got angry. That's what I understood from him, that he just got angry and got stubborn there. For he left these dishes in the sink and then went out to smoke a cigarette, and then when he came in, the Ukrainian girl was already yelling at him and saying, oh my god, you left this here. And therefore I think he just got angry and left. But the point is, yeah, they're both young, and as I highlighted many times, in young ages, you feel the impact of love and of desire way stronger. And I think that this could have something to do with their fight. Yeah, it's really critical. I mean, I've been trying to remedy this, and I've been even suggesting that we make an informal house meeting once every month, could drink some beer to calm down all these problems. But we'll see. I think at the core is really the relationship of them two, and it's like perfect example for this saying, was ich lieb, das neckt sich. But okay, let's return now to the other story I wanted to tell about a Moroccan girl. Oh my god, but maybe I shouldn't be telling this, just that I met her there at Casablanca, and oh my god, no, she's a great girl and everything about her. I just met her in a drugstore. The first day I had forgotten my toothbrush, or not forgotten, my baggage was still in Germany. But never mind, I thought, yeah, just let me buy some toothbrush and things. And there I saw her, and she was so excited. She was like devouring me already with her brown eyes. It was crazy. And then she talked to me, yeah, this is the toothbrush you need, and this or that, and she's so excited, and talking then in French. First I talked English, but her English wasn't quite that well, and then she just, yeah, kept talking French, and I thought, oh, well, okay, yeah, let's try in French, although French is rather bad, but, yeah, I tried and talked a little, but this was, yeah, dazzling. But actually, there was another vendor that had caught my eye, and I was actually thinking of talking to her, but this other girl, she's so, the nice word in German, quirlig. Well, she's straightforward, that says she's extroverted, she's lively, effervescent, whatever, and she therefore caught my attention, talked to me before I could reply to the other girl, because she had already asked me what I needed. But yeah, So something was about her that was dazzling, that's just really, yeah. But never mind then, I got this toothbrush and went and thought what I thought that evening, my first evening in Morocco. I know this because I wrote it down then, that I would like to return there to this drugstore to talk to the other girl, to the other vendor. But then after 3 weeks, I traveled along through Morocco and then got back to Casablanca. And then this girl was there. Both girls were there. And I wanted to talk to the first girl who caught my attention. I just thought of the other girl like kind of an obstacle in my way. I thought, oh my God, she's so quick and not letting me off the hook. She's catching me in her net. She keeps on babbling us. Yeah. It's nice to be talking to her, of course, practicing some French is nice. But the point is that I entered again, and she was again there, and again, yeah, was so forthcoming and lively, and yeah, talked to me, and I wasn't even sure what I was looking for. I said I was looking for some oil, argan oil, which is famous in Morocco. But then she already, this was so great, so yeah, talked to me, asked me what I was doing, how long I was staying in Morocco, if I'd liked it. And there the conversation turned totally personal in a way, and this felt so great. It was like a flirt for 2 or 3 minutes. And the ones who know me, who are familiar with my podcast or myself, they know that I'm shy, and that's always been a huge topic for me, this shyness. But in this moment, at least, I could overcome the shyness a little bit. Therefore, this felt like a great triumph. Be talking to her, and wow, we're talking in French. My French was already a little better. And talking. And then she was so sad that I had to leave already the next day. And she was like eating me up with her eyes, and it felt so great to be immersed into her eyes, her brown eyes. But then she kept repeating this phrases, indicating how sad she felt, like, oh no, that I have to leave tomorrow. But at least I said, yeah, we could exchange our Instagram names, you know, I'm a lot on Instagram. And therefore she gave me her name, and I thought, wow, maybe I can text her later, maybe ask her out, maybe this same night, because I'm too shy to ask her in person. But at least, yeah, if I know her Instagram handle. And this is what happened. This felt like a wow, great experience, being devoured and being in this mutual play, and yeah, just talking French, so even though not even understanding that greatly. And she being straightforward, like what she said was, if I was married. And I pretended not to understand, or sometimes you don't want to understand, or you feel like you can't, this can't be the thing that she actually asked, right? Therefore I said, my French isn't that great. Hey, what are you saying? Tu es marié? And I thought, doesn't that mean married? Marié? Are you married? Wow, she's hitting on me pretty heavily, it seems. But I was so shy, I couldn't believe it, what was happening to me. And therefore, yeah, I went after 5 minutes where we talked, and I said, oh no, I can't buy this argan oil. I hadn't much money left in my... Yeah, therefore I just left, and she was like guarding me. She was like, yeah, protecting me like I'm her private property. But when I went to see some other products, she came with me then, like if she wanted, like as if she wanted to ensure that I wouldn't be falling into the hands of another co-worker. But whatever. So this was and a great experience that made me feel like, this was totally the girl that I was looking for. Never mind that there was this other girl that actually at first caught my eye in the beginning. Well, that's sad, but, you know, I'm like this. I just wait for the girls, and whoever is ready to make those first steps, I will accept her, and I will be happy to love her. And, wow, you just gotta do this. And in a way, it's sad to be thinking that millions or... let's say many girls would be waiting for me to make those first steps, and they're just feeling like, yeah, I'm a girl, I'm a woman, this is my identity, so I have to wait. But I'm feeling as a man, especially after what happened with her, I'm feeling like, no, I won't do this, I'll never do this, you just gotta show me that you can do it, and whatever, just say hello, just say something, yeah, what are you doing? And then I will be happy to talk to you. But I'm feeling shy, I'm feeling comfortable being shy, and sorry, this is just me, and I'm waiting for you, and I'm waiting for this girl, And this girl then totally, yeah, totally made me feel like, well, this, I gotta fall in love with you. I can't fall in love with you. And this is what I did then, returning to my hotel, which was rather far from the center of Casablanca. Then I was in my bedroom all alone. This bedroom had blue walls all around. It was crazy scenery. And then I wrote to her and waited for a reply and thought, oh no, she's not going to reply. But she was working until 10 or 9, I think, and then goes home. And therefore she replied late at 11 and said, oh yeah, tonight can't be, of course, too late, but maybe we could meet tomorrow before your flight. But my flight, yeah, it was too early, 12 already, so there was no chance we were going to meet. And I felt, yeah, sad, but also great. Hello, so I made a short pause, and I gotta say, I noticed that I don't want to say that much more. We gotta end soon, draw to an ending. Just about this girl, what happened in Morocco is the typical thing. There's nothing special, nothing individual. It's just about imperialism. And I talked also in my Instagram videos about my host, hosting some kind of rented apartment where I was living. And also he was having this imperialist problems with his girlfriend from France. She keeps exploiting him. And there's this imbalance, this difference in love. This is what I meant at the beginning. I'm so sorry to have said this, but in a way this is true also in the relationship with Manita, with my Peruvian girl. I felt this heavily, that there's a trench between us. A wall or a fence. This is the fence of imperialism, where it says this one nation, this is a safe nation, this is a safe harbor, like Germany. This is my harbor and my capital. I'm safe as a German, and she is not, as a Peruvian citizen. She's just poor, and yeah, this is the thing. This Moroccan guy, also poor. And his girlfriend from France, she had all the power over him, and this was so nasty. Their fights then break up. I don't know if they've actually broken up, but this was, oh man. He was, he was facing some deep problems economically, because when he would break up with her, his whole line of business would be vanishing, his income from renting those apartments, because this was all what she had organized and belonged all to her, the washing machine and many things from the house, the stuff. And she said she wanted to take this then to France, everything. So okay, this is the kind of imperialist problems, and the same happened to this Moroccan girl and me. And I don't blame her, but I just gotta say, for now it feels like, oh so sorry, but feels like this is not the perfect love story I was imagining. Although we're still in contact, and you know, yeah, let me tell you. So she's thinking about marrying, and yeah, the point is, if I had caught this plane, yeah, we'd never met. But I didn't. I missed the plane the next day, and I rebooked it for 2 days later, which gave me one full more day in Casablanca, where I could meet her. Luckily, it was her day off from work. She has to work a lot, of course, 10 hours there, 6 days a week, or yeah, 5 days and a half day. And we met. It was a beautiful meeting, and everything was so great. But I don't want to go into the details, it's personal. Just the one thing at the ending, well, she was snuggling up, or she was something. You know, in Morocco, the life is different than here, especially you see so many people in the streets, but the people aren't, the love pairs are not kissing or touching in an erotic way in public. This is not possible in Morocco. You can hold hands, yeah, you can make a walk like this, holding hands, but you can't go really much further. But okay, then somehow, yeah, this girl, we had spent a beautiful night. We went to a shopping mall and to a cafe. But then, yeah, at the end, she was like, yeah, I want to live with you, want to come to Germany. And this is her objective. She said she's suffering there in Morocco. She can't stay there. She wants to come with me. She wants to. And what can I do for her? And oh my God, I told her, yes, it's totally possible to emigrate to Germany. You have to learn German and find a job. But yeah, she doesn't have this patience. And then at the end, she asked for money. Like, she asked me if I could give her 200 euros. And yeah, first it was like, yeah, would you lend me money? I will pay it back. But I told him, no, this is not necessary. But I felt really pissed at this moment already. I mean, on one hand, I understand this imperialism and causing all these trenches, and we're just not on the same page, not on the same level as citizens of these different countries, imperialists and non-imperialists. But on the other hand, wow, if this is really going to have a chance as a love relationship, then this is a bad way to start, to be asking for money on the first date. Like, oh man. And then, yeah, I gave her something. We went to a bank, in the center of the city. We returned from that place, from the beach there where the shopping center was with the taxi, and then went eating something in the street, street food place. And, yeah, I gave her, like, 100 euros. But just that... You know, she expects to marry, she wants to marry, and was asking me about if I'm single, if I'm with someone, if I want to marry her and can help her to come there. And I was like, wow, this is not what I wanted. I mean, I understand you totally that life is shit there in Morocco, you don't earn that much, you just have a dream of a better life and everything. But, well, so yeah, I don't want to reveal that much. More, just have to tell you how helpless I am now. I'm talking to this girl once in a while. I mean, it's great. On one hand, I want to improve my French. And I did one podcast for her, said she could learn German, was trying to teach her some words. But just to talk some French with her is great. But, whoa, this can't go on, I feel like. But whatever, it's always these problems are always going to persist. Like with Manita also. Oh yeah, let me reveal this. Manita was very critical of what I revealed back in September in my videos after getting fired. This was like the greatest time in my life, I felt. The time before my parents arrived back, the time I spent with my grandparents and after getting fired. And this there I felt really smooth and relaxed, everything. This problematic situation had not really hit me yet. But there I revealed that, yeah, I give her money, Manita, so that she could have some financial independence. But then she texted me, oh no, don't tell this in public, I don't understand you, just don't give me the money if you don't like it, but don't talk about it. And okay, but I want to talk about it, because I want to lay open this imperialist trenches. What? How can you love someone in a situation like this, when you just, yeah, when someone is dependent on... We're just struggling to make an existence here in Germany and trying to help with this money, but on the other hand, this money also makes this whole wall or trench larger, and this gap between the two persons, the two lovers. Yeah, exactly. This is... This is the whole point, and I don't want to say anything more. Just this Moroccan girl, I feel like have to get rid of her or tell her somehow that it can't be between us. No, this can't happen. But no, it's not that. It's just that she asked once, you know. That then she asked again when I was here, just after some days, when I arrived back in Germany. And then I sent her some more, and then after, you know, she even told me someone had stolen the money I gave her first, and now, oh, she needed more, and then after 5 days, oh yeah, now it's gone, she spent everything and she needs more. I don't know what, I'm so sorry. I mean, we all are like this, and this is a small amount I gave her. I mean, how much money did I even spend on this whole vacation? Like, these are thousands of euros, and so it's totally everyone's right to have pleasure, to spend to enjoy things, and it's so unjust, this world, that here in Germany there's a class, the class of the capitalists or the working aristocrats to which my father belongs, and who can do this and can achieve everything, can travel through the world, and other people can't and are just stuck there in Morocco and can't even figure out a plan how to get out there, although it's possible, like Manita did, emigrating. But not everyone is that smart or is that determined to do this, and I think this is the problem with this girl. She's not that determined for herself. She doesn't have this this will or this determination, and therefore her plan is to marry someone European, and this is what she told me. She want to marry and then go to live in Europe, and I'm the perfect guy for her. She says she loves me, and okay. Now I want to talk about my ex-boss, this guy Umbrak, because I just felt a lot of grief now. Starting 2 weeks ago at my new firm, felt like this was not great, leaving the old firm, the UPIC, the Swinish firm, because whatever went wrong there, I still liked being there, and I shouldn't have accepted this. Why would I accept this? Or I even could have, tried to hire a lawyer to make some kind of denounce against them for, pressuring me like this, like exploiting the situation right after the test, the 2 hours test for the Microsoft Azure exam they made me take, and right after this, they pulled me out and said, we gotta talk again. My boss, Umbrak, and this other guy, the German guy, Schindler, right after the test, didn't even give me a pause. I said, I need a pause now. I'm really beat down. I'm so tired from this test. But no, he said, no, it's not possible now. We gotta talk now. And yeah, then just forcing me, applying mental violence and extortion to make me sign this fucking termination contract. And fuck you, I just say, yeah, maybe I understand it, or I have some thoughts this week now that it all had to do also with this takeover, and the owner of the company wanted to sell, and maybe therefore you needed to get rid of me, maybe because of economic considerations, or maybe because the story with Fiona was like a liability to the firm, and you needed to ensure that this that everything went fine with this selling of the company. Maybe, I don't care, but then I also thought back on episode 171 or 172 it was, which was titled Betriebsrat, Workers' Council, and this was exactly also the episode where everything went wrong, or from that, this is the Kipppunkt, as I analyzed, this is the point where things went bad and when I felt, oh no, Fiona, I'm provoking you with this, and I'm sorry, I just hope you can see through it, Fiona, that I don't mean it, actually. I don't mean that I want or need to love someone from my own class, from a richer family, but I still say it just to provoke you, because I feel you also are hurting me, doing violence to me by your behavior, by not talking, by being that stubborn, right, Fiona? That the Betriebsrat could have been problematic for a whole other reason, because of course workers' council bosses don't like to see them. They like the workers to be weak and be individualized so they can exploit them better. And maybe this was the reason, because he was listening to the podcast, and maybe he was thinking this is a huge risk for the firm. I mean, financially, what this could cost us if this guy really goes through with this and will found the workers' council, and then the workers' council would make all the negotiations about salaries. This would be a problem for the firm, which was already in economic problems the last years, as I saw it. And sorry, Umbrak, maybe you were just not successful enough at selling our products, and that's on you, right? you asshole. Then you make me pay for it. Fire me to make the company look more attractive, or to prevent me from doing this workers' council. And whatever, you asshole. You know? Because I'm the one who generated all the millions. With this project we had going since years ago, and this was the best project for the firm. It was like, one of the highest paying. And I, as a worker, was not paid greatly at all. So this was a perfect situation for you exploiting me. I mean, I had even my reduced hours and was generating all this income for you. Other workers didn't even have anything to do. The economic situation was getting worse and dire by every month. And this is how you pay me back, right? By firing me, and not even just firing me, but whatever. Extorting and whatever, you know, but just this one thing, this really bugs me, this after the test, because I feel like if it hadn't been for that, maybe, yeah, I could have been more defying, and should have been, I even should have been that defiant as to say, no, I'm not going to you to have this meeting now right after the test, you fucking idiot, you hombre. But yeah, I'm not this way, and this was exactly your plan, of course, your scheme. Therefore, you planned this, to do this right after the test, because then you could get me, and you felt, oh no, if this boy is going to be that strong and daring like he acts in his podcast, then we have no chance of making him sign this. But there could be a chance now, because of this story with Fiona, these accusations, and then pressure of the test, and fine. And I feel just so sad now, because I even feel like Umbrek is a nice guy and I wanted to work with him still. I mean, he's, yeah, just think maybe Umbrek should focus more on the software development again, and let this business and acquisition of clients and projects to other people, maybe hire someone for this marketing. And but I don't know why he wanted to go into this distribution, into the sales area, yeah, but somehow fancied this. And yeah, sorry Umbrek, but I just feel you're a great program and you have a lot to teach and to give, and yeah, I would have liked to work with you even after what you did to me, and even after feeling, wow, you're a guy that is really addicted to work, you're an addict, and this makes work at times frustrating and hard, but still, somehow I feel grateful, and I feel great about everything we accomplished together, this great project. And I just feel, what are you doing? If I just could understand, you know, if I just could believe the story you told me about Fiona, that this is the reason you need to let me go. But no, I don't believe this. It just doesn't make sense. It's bullshit. And yeah, the only thing that makes a little more sense is this workers' council thing, or just a takeover that you have to get rid of someone, just economic problems. Yeah, many people without employment in our firm. So yeah, this big project I was working on was ending anyway. So you didn't need me for it anyways, and you thought like, well, we have enough employees for the next projects. We don't have projects, right? So therefore, it's great to have the chance to let someone go. But the easy way, don't have to pay him anything more, the usual 3-month period. But okay. And yeah, I just kept thinking of this now these last days, because I felt just so fucking sad that it's over, and I feel like I haven't even realized this in the last month, and just now beginning to realize that it's over with this firm. And this is like a first love, the first firm you worked at, feeling like I never want to love someone else, never want to work for someone else, although it's a great company where I'm now at, but still feel like I would prefer to work for this other company, and just because I don't know why, but just because I'm used to it, I felt like identifying with this firm. And yeah, and even after everything that happened, still feel like loyal to this firm and feeling, yeah, this is the place I want to be and want to work and want to give everything I have. But okay, Umbrek, then fuck you. If you don't want this, fine. Then this is, yeah, what I have to accept. In imperialism, we the workers are very powerless and helpless, and okay, so fine. Asshole. And I thought now back with a lot of regret that this phase right after signing this bullshit agreement of termination, this was such a sprightly, lively phase in my life. I was doing all these videos at my grandparents' house. It was like a vacation. I really needed that vacation after all the stress. I felt, well, finally relieved from this bullshit test. Ah, this is such a gigantic psychological burden to have to take this test. Exactly like my boss, the other boss, not the one, this Umbrek, this shady guy Umbrek, no, but a guy I highly admire, gave him the name of Messner. I admire him on one hand, but on the other hand, I also have to say, yeah, you let yourself and your own employees be maneuvered out by Umbrek, right? And this is not that great. If you were really caring for your employees, you wouldn't have let this happen. Like, I was a loyal employee to you, and I'm sorry that Umbrek is just this way. He's taking over the firm and he's not leaving you any power, but that's what you think, right? It just depends on you to you have to fight back. And yeah, of course I could have fought back, but also you, Messner, also it was your task to do this, to stand up, to say no, this is not going to happen, we're not going to let go this employee just on the basis of some rumors or something that hasn't even been investigated or corroborated, or what even happened, what are the accusations. So this is, so sorry, Messner, I just also have to tell you, don't think you're listening, or your English also is not that good, I think, but okay, just have to tell you that I'm also disappointed. But on the other hand, I never can be really disappointed, just feeling also still so loyal, and to no one I feel so that loyal as to you. Umbrek, yeah, he's an asshole in certain aspects, but he's also a very energetic guy and has very much to give, to offer, his insights, his knowledge about programming. And you, Messner, I just admire you, the way you're leading your team, your employees, and yeah, caring for them, except in my case, right? But yeah, except this last incident, I always felt you were caring for me, you were fulfilling my wishes, like I'm reducing my time, my hours. And I thank you, but just feel also a little empty about everything, about how it ended, and just feel like, this. How can this be? This is a vile oppression, and it's exactly the way I felt when I was beginning to work with this firm, that I'm nothing as a worker, I just have to accept your conditions, and I will. Because I will be so grateful to be finally working, be part of this working class. And what can I do? Some workers maybe can be more daring, fighting back, but I certainly can't. And therefore we need a Betriebsrat. This is the whole thing, the whole thought, the Workers' Council. This must be the institution who's fighting on behalf of the workers, so that not everyone has to fight for himself. But okay. And now, what else did I want to say? Let's draw it to an end soon. I have to get up early tomorrow, right? Going there, but I feel great. It's exactly what I want to do. I want to show it to you that I can be a great programmer, and that you made a mistake, a very, very great mistake by letting me go. I will prove this. And I was even thinking about, yeah, if I could come to be rich and have a fortune later in my life, maybe through working as a programmer. I don't know how much such a company would cost, but I certainly could buy my old company, the Yupik. I mean, they're in economic crisis anyway. The investors, they're like these, the investors who bought it now, they're like, I think at least like Heuschrecken. They just want to pull out all the capital and then go. Locusts, grasshoppers. This is financial investors that come in when a company is doing badly, and then they, yeah, buy it at a low price and then get out all the capital. They make, they earn their money this way, make profit, because there is actually maybe more capital in the company than the buying price. They just sell out everything and they cash out. And then they sell the company or just leave it to languish and die. And this is a great business for them. But of course, all the employees then get unemployed, get fired, or did the company just go bankrupt? And I think this is the kind of investor that you found there, Umbrek. And I just got to tell you this to the face, or to your ears, in case you're listening. I think you're doing a shitty job there, as at least as a salesman or... yeah. But you're a great programmer, and I just would wish to work with you again, and this is so sad. But okay. Now, well, yeah, I guess this is all... yeah, I would like to buy this company. This is what I meant. Buy this and then be the boss and then take revenge. But I wouldn't even fire you, Umbrek, right? I would just say to you, you go to a vacation now, fully paid vacation, but still vacation, because I know that you don't like vacation. You always said you like to be at work, because when you're at home, you don't know what to do. When you're on vacation, you like getting bored and getting nervous and just feeling you want to go back to work. So this will be the greatest torture to you, to tell you you have to stay off work for 3 months, and maybe this will cure your addiction a little bit. And this is what I would do to you as a revenge. But I would tell you, of course, yeah, I need you as an employee. You're a very, very valued co-worker for me. And okay, so let me tell, I don't want to tell anything. I think I've done it, I've said it. Let me switch to German. Why not? What else? Well, let's go on. Move on. Moving on. Englisch, das putscht einen auf. Das habe ich schon damals gemerkt und merke es heute wieder. Wie geil ist das denn bitte hier eigentlich? Englisch endlich. Und ich will nicht mehr so viel nachdenken. Ich denke immer zu viel nach. Ja, welches Werk sollte ich schreiben? Welche Sprache sollte ich sprechen? In welcher Sprache schreiben? Und aber Hauptsache, es geht vorwärts, Hauptsache, man schreibt und spricht überhaupt, ja. Also es muss einfach weitergehen, verdammt nochmal. Ich habe einfach das Gefühl, diese letzten Monate, die waren nicht so produktiv, auch wenn ich viel geschrieben habe an diesem Liberalismus und so. Aber da kommen wir zum Punkt, ja, ich will jetzt Liberalismus vorwerfen, ja. Ich werfe mir vor, das geschrieben zu haben und werf euch das jetzt in die Ohren. Ja, das ist also das Ergebnis. Liberalismus, das Werk ist im Wesentlichen abgeschlossen, aber es ist unendlich. Ich weiß nicht, es ist auch nur ein Tagebuch. Es ist kein wirkliches Werk. Aber was ist schon wirklich? Ich las heute übrigens wieder von Schanika, von der ersten Kleinstadtnovelle, ich ja einige Abschnitte vorlas, las ich Legende, das ist sein Magnus Opum. Und das ist auch sehr lesenswert. Aber da dachte ich, das gibt mir auch Mut und so. Also die Frage ist ja nicht objektiv entscheidbar, wie ein Roman zu schreiben ist und so ist auch sein Roman ein bisschen avantgardistisch und so also auch mein Schreiben. Und hier, bitte steigen wir also einfach ein hier in diesen Abschnitt aus Liberalismus. Scheinwerferlicht. Scheinwerferlicht, ja. Mein Sein sitzt da, schwitzt und zittert. Schwitzt und zittert. Gleich soll es reden, soll Rede und Antwort stehen. Was hast du dir gedacht? Was sind deine aktuellen Gedanken? Ja, aber das will ich doch nicht enthüllen. Man könnte mich erschießen dafür. Sowieso sind meine Gedanken oft wild und unzureichend ausformuliert. Also behalten wir sie lieber drin. Wo ist hier der Exit, der Notausgang? Halt, ich will doch nicht reden. Das ist nichts für mich, da enthülle ich mich noch, ziehe mich bis auf die Haut aus. Und dann wird man mich foltern, mit mir Nahrung und Wasser und Schlaf entziehen. Oh weh, wie werde ich aussehen nach so vielen Tagen Folter? Die Leute werden über mich lachen, schadenfroh. Da zerstückle ich mich lieber gleich. Jawohl. Wenn ich hier und heute, sagen wir mal, einfach nur sitzen bleibe, mich nicht rege, nie die Hand hebe, um an der Diskussion teilzunehmen, nun, dann bin ich im sicheren Hafen. Denn dann geschieht mir nichts Unvorhergesehenes. Und diese Welt ist brutal. Ich möchte nicht, dass mich ein unkalkulierbares Ereignis auf dem falschen Fuß erwischt. Und überhaupt, die Grundtatsache dieser Welt ist und bleibt, dass ich die Mädchen begehre, die schönen Frauen, die mir im unterirdischen Bahnhof oder in der Bahn entgegenkommen und mir oder mir gegenüber sitzen. Da lässt sich nicht dran vorbei diskutieren an diesem Fakt. Ich bin verrückt nach ihnen und muss es verheimlichen. Denn was geschähe, mal angenommen den Fall, ich blubberte los, fing einfach an, sagen wir, über die Unzuverlässigkeit der Bahn zu lästern, mich genüsslich auszulassen und auf Beipflichtung meiner Gegenübersitzerin zu hoffen. Das wäre zwar schön, immerhin könnte es zum Erfolg führen, dass sich zwischen uns eine nette Unterhaltung entspönne, die ganz bis zum Ende des Fahrtwegs andauern könnte. Also, daher blocke ich das ab, leite diese Situation nie ein und weiß ja faktisch auch gar nicht, wie das ginge. Tja, nichts zu machen. Und das führt zur Zerstückelung. Ich bin zwar da, aber kein ganzer Mensch. Da ist kein Diskurs, keine Sprache, die mich zusammenbindet. Die Worte halte ich schön innen, innerlich zusammengepresst, im Brustkorb eingeschnürt. Nun liegen da meine Finger, meine Brille, Ohren, Zehennägel und natürlich der Penis. Alles einzelne Stücke. Puh, endlich bin ich dekomponiert, in alle Einzelteile zerlegt. Und jetzt bin ich endlich kein Mensch mehr. Niemand kann mich mehr anschauen und sagen, dieser und jener Mensch, er war derjenige, XY war sein Name und er stand für dies und jenes ein. Oh nein, dies wird mir niemand mehr antun. Nur noch einzelne Teile. Ja, hier, das ist der Hals, da geht die Luft durch, die von der Nase eingesogen und runtertransportiert wird. Das hier ist der Brustkorb, der sich dann wölbt, wenn viel Luft drin ist und so weiter. So, das alles ergibt aber keinen ganzen Menschen, niemanden, der mit mir verwechselt werden könnte. Denn ich bin ein Nichts, ein Niemand. Inexistenter als die fabelhaftesten Mythen und Legenden, Drachen und Dinosaurier, Götter und Fantasiewesen. Ja, ich rühme mich tatsächlich ganz durchsichtig zu sein. Denn diese Mädchen, die mir jeweils gegenüber saßen an den tausenden von Tagen, die ich vermutlich schon in S-Bahn fuhr, die hätten sich ja auch mal die Mühe machen können, mich anzusprechen. Dass sie das nie taten, schlussfolgere ich, dass ich inexistent, durchsichtig wie Glas bin. Alle anderen Erklärungen wären nur schlimmer. Die Mädchen warteten etwa auf unsere maskuline Initiative? Das kann ich nicht glauben. Dadurch würden sie sich ja selbst herabsetzen, soweit, dass sie schon unerreichbar unter uns Männer stünden. Männern stünden. Wie schmutzig und eklig müsste man sich fühlen, wenn man tatsächlich als Frau da säße und sich sagte, oh bitte, sprich mich an, ich warte darauf, erheische dies, aber andersrum würde ich nie auf die Idee kommen, dich anzusprechen, das ist mir verschlossen versagt. Die Gesellschaft verbietet es mir als einfachem Mädchen, den Mund zu öffnen und die Jungs zu konfrontieren mit unserer weiblichen Präsenz und unseren schelmischen Einfällen zur Eröffnung einer Unterhaltung. Ja, das reicht hier an dieser Stelle, weil das ist ja sowieso immer das wiederkehrende Thema, sowohl hier als auch in allen meinen anderen oder den meisten anderen Schriften, dass, ja, wer macht den ersten Schritt und so und wie fühlen sich die Frauen nochmal, die Mädchen und Frauen, wenn sie sich tatsächlich so fühlen, wie ich ja beschrieben, dann ist das schon ganz schön ekelhaft und weiß auch nicht, also ich habe da auch nicht die Lösung, liebe Leute, aber ich blätter hier mal kurz vor und dann, ja, es geht jetzt um die neue Firma. Das ist teils autobiografisch. Ne? Der Protagonist ist ja auf der Suche nach einer neuen Firma. Ist gerade arbeitslos und so. Und überhaupt, wo kommt überhaupt diese scheinbare Notwendigkeit her, mein Schreiben und Schaffen zu perfektionieren? Es ist doch auch so gut genug. Da schreibe ich mal einige allgemeinphilosophische Zeilen über die Liebe, schustere ich mir meine Weltanschauung zurecht. Aber klar, man müsste härter arbeiten, um wirklich genau durchzuschauen. Doch das ist so schwer, nimmt uns der Bourgeois doch selbst noch das Verlangen, genau Bescheid zu wissen. Wir werden dressiert, dass uns auch wenig reicht, wenig Verständnis, Überblick und Begrifflichmachung des Kontexts, des Weltzusammenhangs. Denn in Zusammenhängen denken, das ist verpönt, da hat doch jeder so sein Spezialgebiet und seine Ecke, wo er zum Expertentum berufen ist. Nun, es mag ja sein, mein Schreiben ist verbesserungswürdig, doch ich kann ja auch nicht alles und auf einen Schlag verbessern. Jetzt gebt euch halt mal vor, ist hiermit zufrieden. Herrje, das wird ja wohl auch mal reichen, so eine halbautobiografische Mischpoke, eine Anklage des Liberalismus auf philosophischer Ebene und eine Selbstironisierung oder gar Selbstzerstückelung, Zerfleischung in psychologischer Hinsicht. Bekümmert euch nicht darum, verehrte Leser. Mir stand immer der Sinn nach außergewöhnlichen literarischen Formen und Versuchen. Führen wir jetzt aber diesen vorerst vorgeschobenen Text hier, diese Novelle oder dieses philosophisch-künstlerische Manuskript, wenn man so will, zu Ende. Und jetzt kommt einer der seltenen Abschnitte, die wirklich so fiktiv sind, in dem Sinne, dass hier etwas erzählt wird, im Sinne einer klassischen Geschichte, ein Dialog oder so. Und sonst sind es eben nur so Gedankenbruchstücke. Gedankenfetzen herausgezogen aus meinem Gedankenstrom, so in meinem Alltag. Ne? Gut, herzlich willkommen, so leitete Herr Wahl die Besprechung ein. Nun, Sie sehen, wir sind alle ziemlich aufgeregt und haben uns deshalb in so großer Runde versammelt, um Sie willkommen zu heißen. Da sehen Sie. Ah, einen Moment mal. Shit, einen Moment. Ah ja, ich müsste hier nur kurz diesen Namen ändern. Weil ich ja oft so mit realen Namen schreibe, aber ja, jetzt Publikation und so, verwenden wir wieder fiktionalisierte Namen. Also gut, Herr Wahl, also sehen Sie, dort ist Frau Widerspur. Sie kennen sie ja schon von unserem ersten Gespräch. Frau Widerspur nickte mir freundlich zu, sagte aber kein Wort. Ihre Augen, die in klar definierten Augenhöhlen lagen, spiegelten Schönheit und Zauberhaftigkeit. Und dort drüben ist der Herr Helfort. Ihn hatten wir Ihnen ja als zukünftigen Teamleiter vorgestellt. Nun, Herr Rohrbiss, darüber wollen wir nochmals mit Ihnen reden. Aber keine Sorge, wir sind absolut überzeugt, dass Sie der richtige Mann für uns sind. Nur vielleicht doch in einer anderen Abteilung als derjenigen für die GUI-Programmierung unserer Maschinen, die Herrn Helfort untersteht. Daher haben wir also so hier Herrn Fürnichtgut von der Abteilung für Marketing und Markenbewusstsein. Hallo, ja, meine Aufgabe ist, das Renommee der Firma zu überwachen, zu profilieren, zu schärfen und unsere Attraktivität und Sichtbarkeit auf dem Markt zu steigern. Bitte, Herr Wahl, machen Sie erstmal weiter mit der Vorstellung der restlichen Kollegen. Ja, sehr gerne. Dort haben wir also Herrn Hersch, den Leiter der Produktion. Er ist nur hier, um Ihnen als neuen Mitarbeiter eine Führung durch unsere Werkhallen und Montagebereiche zu geben, damit Sie verstehen, was denn hier wirklich hergestellt wird. Oh, sehr gern. Darauf bin ich gespannt. Es ist doch nochmal was Besonderes, bei einer Firma zu arbeiten, die auch wirklich was Handfestes produziert und nicht nur so in den Wolken schwebt und Datenströme hin und her schiebt. Ja, das freut uns, welches Engagement Sie mitbringen. Und schließlich haben wir dort an der Ecke des Tisches Frau Meinert. Sie ist die Social-Media-Beauftragte in unserem Haus. Und nun kommen wir zur Sache, Herr Rohrbiss. Also, wir sind definitiv bereit, Ihnen ein Angebot zu machen. Nur über die Details Ihrer Aufgabe müssen wir nochmal reden. Sollten Sie einverstanden sein mit dem, was wir Ihnen vorschlagen, können Sie sich über ein Gehalt freuen, das auch nochmal deutlich über Ihren Forderungen vom letzten Mal liegen wird. Da haben Sie sich ja im Bereich von 60.000 Euro Jahresgehalt bewegt. Aber hier schlage ich Ihnen vor, 85.000 bar auf die Hand. Also nicht bar, ich meine immer noch als Jahresgehalt brutto, aber mit automatischer Anpassung nach oben sagen wir um 5% jährlich. Die Details können Sie später mit Herrn Eisenbuch klären. Sehen Sie, der seriös aussehende Herr dort mit der Brille. Er ist für die Finanzen unserer Personalien zuständig. Herr Eisenbuch, wichtig ist nur, dass Sie wissen, wir wollen Herrn Rohrbiss jeden Wunsch erfüllen. Also, Herr Eisen, natürlich haben wir keine unbegrenzten Mittel. Wir sind ja auch nur einfache Angestellte und können nicht die Firmenressourcen so verschleudern. Aber wir wollen Ihnen jeglichen finanziellen Wunsch erfüllen, den wir nur können. So, und jetzt zur Sache. Warum also dieser Sinneswandel? Warum sind Sie plötzlich so viel, also mindestens 25.000 Euro mehr wert für uns, Herr Rohrbiss? Nun, machen wir es kurz. Ihr ehemaliger Chef hat sich bei uns gemeldet. Ich hatte ein längeres Telefonat mit ihm. Er wollte Ihnen wohl eins auswischen und breitete genüsslich die Geschichte von Ihren halbseidenen Social-Media-Aktivitäten aus. Er erzählte uns von Ihren Videos, in denen Sie über das ästhetische Aussehen und die toxikologischen Eigenschaften verschiedener Cannabisblüten redeten. Naja, das Aussehen war jetzt nie so ein bestimmendes Thema. Es geht eher um den Geruch, die Farbe vielleicht, wie viel Harz an den Blüten klebt und so weiter. Klar, auch ums Aussehen, ob ein Bad eher dünn oder buschig, stänglich oder voll blättrig aussieht, das ja. Aber im Wesentlichen ging es mir darum, das Konsumerlebnis auszuweiten und meinen Zuschauern diesen zusätzlichen Genuss zu verschaffen. Denn die Vorfreude ist die schönste Freude, so heißt es ja treffend. Und dementsprechend glaube ich, meinen Followern die größtmögliche Freude bereitet zu haben, sich darauf einzustellen, auch bald wieder so einen formidablen Bad zu raufen, wie jenen, den ich ihnen präsentiere, genüsslich betrachtete oder grindete. Das ist sehr interessant, was Sie sagen. Machen Sie sich keine Sorgen wegen der Illegalität und so. Nein, Ihr Chef, ja, der wollte Ihnen eins auswischen und zusätzlich zu Ihrer Entlassung wohl auch noch verhindern, dass Sie einen neuen Job bekommen. Aber so ticken wir hier nicht. Wir haben gleich Ihr Talent erkannt, nachdem wir uns diese Videos anschauten, und möchten Sie einladen, bei uns Markenbotschafter zu werden. Sie werden die Vorzüge unserer Fassadendämmung, Thermolösungen und Matten oder Kunststoffböden auf Social Media anpreisen, als wären Sie eine Blüte. Keine Angst, Sie werden selbstverständlich gut eingearbeitet von Frau Meinhardt. Sie macht Sie bekannt mit allen Eigenheiten der Firma und der von uns produzierten Dämmmaterialien. Dann dürfen Sie Ihre Kreativität freien Lauf lassen. Wir erwarten natürlich schon gewisse Resultate, etwa ein Video pro Tag. Natürlich haben Sie alle Zeit, Ihren eigenen Stil zu finden, zu experimentieren mit verschiedenen Winkeln, Kameras und Einfällen zur Videogestaltung. Aber am Ende muss doch das stehen. Solide Werbevideos für unsere Dämmprodukte. Wie steht es dann um kreative Einfälle zu, sagen wir, negativer Werbung? Ich stelle mir das so vor, dass man sich auch in etwas kritische Distanz begibt und die eigene Firma und das Geschäftsmodell ironisch hintertreibt. Man macht sich lustig über die Kantine oder die Mitarbeiter, die nur daran denken, möglichst schnell in die Kantine zu kommen und ihre Arbeit liegen zu lassen. Da kann auch mal das ein oder andere Schaumstoffteil unverarbeitet unter den Tisch fallen und die Dämmung wird halt weniger gut, weniger dicht. Da sitzen die Kunden mal im kalten Haus, deswegen. Nur deswegen. Aber das will ich transportieren in diesen Videos. Immerhin, die Arbeiter hier haben Spaß. Hier macht jeder gern mit. Die Kantine bietet hunderte Speisen zur Auswahl. Die Rentenversicherung ist sehr gut. Die Kommunikation und Bereitschaft zum Helfen zwischen den Kollegen ist ausgezeichnet. Und da gerät die Arbeit halt mal zur Nebensache. Deshalb kann es sein, dass auch mal unfertige Produkte rauskommen. Aber dazu stehen wir von der Thermo Thompson GmbH. Jawohl, denn uns geht es in erster Linie um unsere Mitarbeiter. Und wer damit ein Problem hat, soll doch woanders einkaufen. Hier kommt jeder auf seine Kosten. Die Arbeit ist eine Freude und lockert einen auf, statt einen zu zermürben. Die Leute stehen Schlange und wollen auch Arbeit bei TT, bei Thermo Thompson. Aber das geht nicht, wir bleiben bescheiden, können nicht mehr einstellen, als wir beschäftigen können. Das sind sehr kreative Einfälle, meldet sich der Marketingleiter herfür nicht gut. Aber ich denke, im Einzelnen müssen Sie das einfach mal ausprobieren und durchspielen, sonst kann man sich schwer was drunter vorstellen. Machen Sie dazu einfach mal erste Entwürfe, Skripte und Aufnahmen mit Frau Meinhardt. Grundsätzlich finde ich Ihre Idee sehr gut, auch mal das Firmen-Image etwas mehr ins Zwiespältige zu rücken. Die Kunden fragen sich dann sicher, ja, meinen die das echt so? Wird da echt so gearbeitet? Aber nicht doch. So sollen sie dann halt die Leute aus dem Vertrieb wieder beschwichtigen. Ist doch alles nur Kunst. Aber wir alle wissen doch, man kann auch mal alle Fünfe gerade sein lassen. Gerade wenn man in einer Industrie mit so hohen Anforderungen an Qualität und Dauerhaftigkeit arbeitet. Man muss den Mitarbeitern auch mal signalisieren, hey, Arbeit ist nicht alles. Jetzt komm auch mal wieder runter. Okay, ja, das war das Ende hier, dieses Text. Und okay, jetzt komm mal wieder runter. Ja, ich fand's gut. Ich fand's halt vor allem schade, dass ich mich nicht so im Griff habe, mich dahin zwinge oder diszipliniere, wie wenn mir jetzt mein Chef die Anweisung gäbe, hier noch weiter zu schreiben und weiter mal in diesem Stil zu schreiben, echte Dialoge. Und ja, so war das halt mehr so eine tagebuchartige Beschreibung dann über mein Leben. In diesem Stumpfsinn ja der Arbeitslosigkeit und wie ich da ins Café gehe und damit füllen sich die weiteren Seiten in diesem Buch. Aber das fand ich, ja, ragte jetzt heraus dadurch, dass einfach so eine Dialogform hatte und ja, mehr gibt's nicht zu sagen, ich bin erledigt, erschöpft und das Deutsche kann dann auch nicht so aufputschen wie das Englische. Ne? Ich könnte nochmal zurückwechseln auf Englisch und so sagen, hey. Aber wozu, ne? Es hat sich doch alles ausgeredet. Und ja, das, so, let's talk English again. So, yeah, sorry, I'm a little tired. Gotta draw to an end soon. The point being, my parents, yeah, then I was a little, oh man, angry at myself now for being that, you know, duckmäuserisch in German. This is when you bow down before the expectations of your parents or of your bosses. Like my parents then telling me, oh my god, you lost your job. Meek or ducky? Yeah, I'm ducky like this, like I always was, but I just thought in this situation I could have been smarter. I mean, I've been doing this podcast all along and should have been prepared at least in a way to stand up for my own product and say, wow, this is my podcast. And you know, maybe things go wrong once in a while. You can't deliver astonishingly clean work every time, and maybe things got out of hand in the podcast, but still, this is my product and I'm proud of it. In a whole, in the big picture, it's a great thing, and I don't want it to be I don't want people to speak badly about it and tell me what a mistake this was or how how bad this is. Of course this is bad, having lost my job, but whatever. It's also a distinguishment. It's a reference for my podcast that it can be that impact, can have that such a great impact to other people. Although it's a negative impact, but okay, still. Yeah, with my parents, I mean, that I said, oh yeah, of course I have to look for a job. And this is what got me into the wrong mood already. I should have been, yeah, just relaxing and thinking about the future, thinking about what that I want to do. I had other ideas, like becoming a language teacher, but in the end I think programmer is not that bad, it's great. But still, it would have been a great chance just to experiment and think about it and say, maybe yeah, I can maybe give some lessons, see if I like this, and this can be like a hobby, like a side work. But it could have been great to explore this, like being a language teacher or something. But I didn't give myself the time, because then after these 2 weeks coming back, my parents came back from vacation, and I was doing them a favor. This is kind of the same like with this fucking test. I'm doing them a favor, like the company. I'm sacrificing myself. Like Messner said, oh man, he's so grateful that I'm doing it, that he doesn't have to do it. Oh man, he would be so scared of taking such a test. And the same thing, I'm doing this favor for my parents, taking care of my grandparents, and just to get repaid from them like this, like, dude. But okay, let's leave it at that. I understand them, this is their moral, their way of thinking that they've been used to their whole life, and I understand them. I'm just angry at myself that I haven't been smarter and maybe shouldn't have told them that early, or yeah, somehow I should have kept it to myself. What the fuck, yo, it's just all this shit, like this pressure that you have to have a job, have income. If not, you're nothing, you're lost. And yeah, I mean, what will happen to you? Like in Morocco, people don't even get paid when they're sick. So what will happen to you? You become sick, you lose your job, you're living on the street. And wow, this is crazy. Why is it that way? Is it just in Germany? Just in very few countries here in Western Europe, North America, and some other countries like Japan? We have some workers' rights. We have a situation where you can say, well, exploitation is at least not that bad, but still still it's bad, but not like people are starving or dying from it. But dude, you know, this is the whole thing. Yeah, my parents, they're just part of the system. They're not to blame, not any more than any other of us. And they're just adopting to the ideology. And they're just so scared, so fucking scared of dying, of everything, of being deprived of all these goods and products. And therefore, this is their mentality that developed this way. And I'm fine with it. I just don't understand my own acting. But of course, it's understandable from this, my character being so meek and shy, meek, modest and everything. And yeah, this is the thing. But only one more thing to you, Fiona, that I feel, well, maybe I signed this contract, although knowing it was wrong. Shouldn't have done, just should have, yeah, let this go, play out to see if they can fire me. If they can get through, fine, then just do it. But I wouldn't be rebellious, I don't want to give in that easily. But I did this to feel like, yeah, it was you who did this to me, Fiona. You had a real impact, had a power over me. You did some violence to me, violence act by this. And yeah, you know, yeah. And this is all I want to say. Don't want to explain this. Because, you know, women are not as strong as men. At least that's what you think, right? But I was trying to explain how this all could work to empower women, right? Empowerment. To make them stronger, and that you can have your own decisions, your own thoughts, and your own steps that you take by your own will. But this is not, it's not that easy, and okay. So it's like, yeah, I want to live this tragic story. Like with Manita, I feel this heavily. She wants to live that too. Everything in love is about tragedy and about hurt feelings for her. And in this way, it's explainable what happened, why it happened, why I gave in that easily to my stupid bosses and signed this. And what I'm feeling was such a mistake. The reason is that, yeah, I wanted to feel you are doing this to me, Fiona. You're putting this knife into my heart and you have this power, and fine, then do it. But it weren't even necessary. I mean, why? To what a whale all this? You could have just stayed at the company. It's all artificial, right, Fiona? You could have stayed, you could have complained and said, they need to let me go. Or I could have stayed, yeah, I could have said no, don't sign this. But I didn't want to, I wanted to feel, yeah, you're doing this to me, you're ruining my job. And okay, but I'm finished now. I think I've said it all, and it's great to be back talking English. I don't care even about publication, you know, this is what I felt. I don't even want to go forward with that podcast feeling like, wow, this last episode I published, the first one from Morocco, but it feels like, well, to what end, to what avail? I don't care what I do, what I publish or don't. I will think about it, but in the end it all comes out, right?